Welcome to Historical Jesus. I'm Mark Vinette. Appointed by the Romans as King of Judea, and thanks to his feature in the Gospel of Matthew, King Herod the Great is one of the infamous figures from the whole of history. This ruthless, cruel, paranoid, yet powerful and canny ancient Near Eastern ruler had contacts in his lifetime with a series of Goliath figures from the ancient Hellenic Mediterranean world. From Caesar to Cleopatra, and from Mark Antony to Augustus. Let's learn more about this titan of history from Seth Schwartz, professor of classical Jewish civilization at New York City's Columbia University.
The time of Herod, the period of the kingship of Herod, the kingdom of Judea was a creation of the Roman Senate in the period immediately before the end of the Roman civil wars and the victory of Octavian over Mark Antony at the Battle of Actium in 31. Herod was named king in the year 40. The interesting thing about the year 40 is that the year 40 BCE was the year when the Parthians conquered Syria. The Romans had been ruling Syria since 63 BCE, which marks the end of the Hellenistic period when the great general Pompey marched through and finally brought the Seleucid Empire to its conclusion and defeated all his other enemies and conquered the entire Levant. But then in the year 40 BCE, the Parthians, who were the Romans' chief competitor to the east across the Euphrates, conquered Syria. Herod fled to Rome and was welcomed into the Senate by Mark Antony and Octavian, who were running the show after the assassination of Julius Caesar in 44, and he was named king. They gave him the title of king, and they didn't assign him a territory. The reason they didn't assign him a territory was because the Romans didn't control the territory that Herod could have possibly ruled. So what they were really doing is they were giving him a task. They were saying, go home to the central southern Levant, conquer what you can, and it's yours. People often think that when it comes to the granular details, the Romans had a sort of grand plan of imperial expansion. And certainly if you pull the camera back far enough, they did in the aggregate have such a strongly expansionist orientation that it looks as if there was a grand plan. But in the facts on the ground, things were very improvisatory. And it took at least a century, in fact, a little bit more from that point until the East, what was going to become the Eastern part of the Roman Empire. There isn't a Roman Empire yet. The Roman Empire is still in the future. The East of the Roman Empire was going to be transformed into a kind of standardized province, governor, responsible to the emperor in Rome, that kind of setup, which was basically imposed on most of the Roman West from the very beginning. In the Roman East, the trouble for the Romans was that they were coming to rule over these people whom they themselves regarded as more or less, in the Greek sense, political. Civilized is the Latin equivalent of political. That is, people who already had pre-existing political organizations. They didn't recognize the so-called tribal organizations of the people in the West as political, so they felt absolutely free to impose their political will on them and totally new patterns of organization. That is, they provincialized those places right away. In the East, they didn't provincialize right away. It took a century and more of tinkering. And really, it looks up close, it's tinkering. They're just doing it on the fly. They're figuring out new arrangements. The Romans often chose people to rule in the eastern areas which they had conquered, who were close to previous ruling dynasties, but not identical with the previous ruling dynasty. So Herod came from a very distinguished landowning family in what was called Idumea. Idumea was the southern part of what had once upon a time been the kingdom of Judah, but it had been, in the course of the 6th century BC and the 5th century BC, gradually been taken over by an influx of what in the Bible are called Edomites. So Herod was an Edomite. His grandfather or great-grandfather, probably multiple great-grandparents, were among those who had, whatever precisely this would have entailed, become Jewish in the last decade of the 2nd century BCE. When the previous ruling dynasty of Judea, that is the Hasmoneans, conquered Idumea, the southern half of old Judah, and according to our sources, made a deal with the inhabitants. You can become Jewish or you can leave. It might have been helpful for the Edomites that one way for a man to become Jewish is to be circumcised. The Edomites were circumcised on their own. They already practiced male circumcision, so it was relatively pain-free. However problematic it may have been in other ways, it didn't involve that. So Herod was a descendant of one of the leading families in this district who had been allies and friends of the Hasmonean kings for a few generations by the time Herod came along. Idumea started surprisingly far north, 6 or 7 miles south of Bethlehem. So you didn't even have to walk a full day from Jerusalem to reach Edomite territory. The fortress which marked the boundary was a little bit south of Bethlehem. Initially, it extended down into the Negev desert. But then a few centuries later, the Nabataeans came on the scene and took over the southern part of what had once been Edomite territory. Palestine didn't have a clearly defined trajectory at first. Pompey conquers it. He tries to introduce some new standards of political organization in Palestine as a whole. It doesn't take. It doesn't work out for whatever reason. His successors kind of don't know what to do. The Hasmoneans are still, to some extent, in partial control, but they're no longer independent monarchs. And they themselves were, as soon as Pompey arrived on the scene, they were already bursting out into an internal dynastic war among themselves. Herod was aligned with one of the parties in that dynastic war, Herod and his family. So they originated as creatures in the entourage of one of the combating brothers, Hyrcanus II. Our main source, the Jewish historian who wrote in Greek, who lived at the end of the first century CE, describes Hyrcanus as a kind of retiring, shy, unenergetic person, so that Herod's father basically could sort of stomp all over him and legitimately take over because of his uselessness. Other sources give a completely different picture of Hyrcanus II. When Julius Caesar invaded Egypt in the year 47 and was involved in the Alexandrian War and he needed more troops, he called on his allies in the region, who included Hyrcanus II. It was this guy and not Herod or Herod's father whom Julius Caesar thanked. So clearly there's some sense in which, as far as the Romans were concerned, before Caesar's assassination and before the Parthian invasion of Syria, the family of Herod was nothing. They were just retainers of the guy who really had the power, who was the Hasmonean heir. So then Parthians invade, the Parthians are expelled. The Romans don't know what to do with Palestine. Herod does have the help of a Roman legion. One Roman legion is 5,000 to 6,000 troops, but Herod actually raises troops locally. Herod had played some sort of role in the administration of Galilee in the mid-40s BC, actually even before Caesar's assassination. And he had clearly used the opportunity to ingratiate himself with various local parties, not least of whom was the Roman governor of Syria, Sextus Caesar, who was Gaius Julius Caesar's cousin. So when he returned, he was able to raise troops. And also, depending on his apparently still strong family ties in his home district of Idumea, so he had an army which consisted of Galileans and Idumeans, both of whom were Jewish. And then there was the Roman legion along with him. So he was successful. It took him 3 years. The Parthians had installed on the throne the last Hasmonean king named Antigonus. They had carted off Antigonus's uncle, who was Herod's patron, Hyrcanus, and sent him to Mesopotamia as a prisoner. Kings or royal figures were usually treated fairly well when they were taken captive, as he was, so he suffered no harm as a result. Well, the one thing was that before he was carted off, his nephew, whom the Parthians had crowned king, is reported in one source to have bit off his uncle's ear. You couldn't lose worse, at least it wasn't his nose, but that was to render him unfit to serve as priest in the Jerusalem temple. Someone with a physical blemish of that sort could not fulfill his priestly functions in the temple of Jerusalem. And Hyrcanus was the high priest of the Jerusalem temple. So he was put out of business in that respect. Herod does reconquer much of Palestine. Not all of it, but he does manage to reconquer much of it. He reconquers Galilee, Samaria, Judea, Idumea, which is the main central spine of the country. And he also conquers most, but not all, of the Greek cities along the coast. Some of those cities are actually the private property of Cleopatra VII, and they can't really be touched. So he doesn't touch those, but he does reconquer the country. Contrary to what people often think, it was a part of the world which was not of tremendous strategic interest to anyone. It was a shame to lose it, but they probably felt that it was okay to take a risk, and they might have been willing to commit more if it had been necessary, but it probably would have come at the expense of Herod's future if that had happened. But Herod delivered it to them. He's become king at a moment of exquisite tension, at the very point of the crumbling of the Roman Republic. It's true that the initial stages of the civil war, see, Caesarians against Pompeians, had ended successfully for the Caesarians, but now the Caesarian party was crumbling. Octavian and Antony were on the verge of war against each other. Antony was the ruler of the East. So at this particular moment, Herod only really had to worry about Antony. He didn't really have to worry about Octavian at all. I think the first 6 or 7 years of his reign were characterized by one kind of tension, which centered on pleasing Antony and pleasing Cleopatra, but also trying to keep track of the growing hostility between Antony and Octavian. And the following period, when Octavian takes over and starting 27 becomes the Emperor Augustus, is characterized by a different kind of tension, where he's dealing with someone who actually is far more powerful and has unlimited ability to do him harm. He was put in his position by Rome. He had good local connections. He tried to exploit them, and he probably wasn't totally unsuccessful, despite what one is accustomed to thinking about it. But it was really the leading Roman senators at first, and then the Roman emperor, who were the ones that he really had to struggle to please, while still keeping his kingdom, which was incredibly diverse and complex, in one piece. And in a profitable state, not because he was paying tribute to Rome. It's actually not clear that he was paying tribute to Rome in any direct way. He was showering everyone with gifts all the time, but it's actually not known that he was paying a regular tribute. But he had to do it for his own sake because he had his own army that he needed to support. He had a private legion, basically, which needed to be fed. And he had projects, which, whatever the reasons were for him to undertake them, they cost a tremendous amount of money. So it was in his interest to keep things under control, calm, profit-bearing. They didn't want too much chaos. And it also kept first Antony and then Augustus, if he did that, on his side.
I'm Mark Vinette. Thank you for sharing your time with me. Doctors endorse it, nutritionists recommend it, and customers love it. Calotrin Healthy Weight Loss. Ron in Texas lost 35 pounds. Marie in Pennsylvania lost 117 pounds with Calotrin. Diane not only lost weight, but she also found relief from arthritis. Lynn lost over 45 pounds. Calotrin contains collagen, the most abundant protein naturally occurring in the human body, which decreases as we age. Taking Calotrin promotes better sleep, more energy, less joint pain, and best of all, weight loss. Calotrin has an amazing 86% success rate with their 90-day supply. And this week, take advantage of their President's Day sale. Buy the 90-day supply and get an extra month free, plus free shipping. Ordering is so easy. Just text the word HISTORY to the code 30605, and we'll send you a link to this special offer. Again, text HISTORY, that's HISTORY, using the code 30605.